The body of an Israeli hostage recovered from Gaza.
The body of Yehudit, may her soul rest in peace, was recovered by our forces, the 7th Brigade, which was scanning the area near the El Shifa hospital.
Plus, the plight of Palestinian children.
They need the basics. They need food and water, but they also need clothing. They need medication. They need shelter. They need hygiene kits. They need access to medication and medical care, and that's also a significant factor as well.
And later, the war in Gaza is causing suffering as well. Well as condemnation far from Israel's borders. And an update from Ukraine, where President Volodymyr Zelensky's government is facing a new challenge from an ally. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish. The body of Yehudit Weiss, one of about 240 hostages taken by Hamas gunmen when they stormed into southern Israel on October 7th, was recovered by troops in a building near Shifa Hospital in Gaza on Thursday. Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari is Israel's military spokesperson.
The body of Yehudit, may her soul rest in peace, was recovered by our forces, the 7th Brigade, which was scanning the area near the El Shifa hospital, recovered her body in one of the homes during the scanning. Near her body, we found the bodies of terrorists who were holding Yehudit.
An army statement said the body had been identified by forensic examiners and the family has been informed. Additionally, the body of 19-year-old Noah Marciano, a 19-year-old Israeli soldier, was recovered as well. Sadly, as the AP's Charles Della Desma reports, recovering bodies has become commonplace, if at times difficult, in the Gaza Strip.
Thousands of bodies lie buried in rubble in Gaza. Families dig to retrieve them, often by hand. The wreckage goes on for block after devastated block. The smell is sickening. Every day, hundreds of people claw through tons of rubble with shovels and iron bars and with their bare hands. They're looking for the bodies of their children, their parents, their neighbours. All of them are killed in Israeli missile strikes. The corpses are there, somewhere in the endless acres of destruction. More than 5 weeks into Israel's war with Hamas, some streets are now more like graveyards. Officials in Gaza say they don't have the equipment, manpower or fuel to search properly for the living, let alone the dead. I'm Charles de la Desma.
All this as the United Nations was forced to stop deliveries of food and other necessities to Gaza on Friday, and warned of the growing possibility of widespread starvation after internet and telephone services collapsed because of a lack of fuel. The communications blackout, now in its second day, largely cuts off Gaza's 2.3 million people from one another and the outside world, and it paralyzes the coordination of aid, which humanitarian groups were already struggling to deliver because of the fuel shortage. Due to the lack of fuel, Friday, the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees was unable to bring in its aid convoy. This, according to their spokesperson, Juliette Tuma. Midday Friday in Washington, a U.S. State Department official confirmed that Israel will allow more fuel, up to 140,000 liters a day, to get through. As international pressure mounts on Israel for a ceasefire, the latest call to action against Israel has come from the south, 8,500 kilometers to the south. South Africa has filed a referral to the International Criminal Court in The Hague, asking that it investigate alleged war crimes in Gaza. As Kate Bartlett reports, South Africa's ruling party also announced it would support a call for the closure of the Israeli embassy in the country.
South Africa has requested that the International Criminal Court in The Hague investigate alleged Israeli war crimes in its war with Hamas. President Cyril Ramaphosa made the announcement while on a state visit to Qatar, where he said he had spoken to the country's ruler about the worsening humanitarian situation in Gaza.
We both abhorred what is happening right now in Gaza, which has now turned into a concentration camp where genocide is taking place.
Ramaphosa said South Africa did not condone the actions taken by Hamas when the group launched a deadly attack on Israel last month, killing more than 1,200 people and taking 240 hostages. However, he criticized the Israeli response, saying people were dying like flies in Gaza's besieged hospitals.
As South Africa, we have accordingly, together with many other countries in the world, saw fit to refer this whole Israeli government action to the International Criminal Court.
Contacted by VOA, Israeli Ambassador Eliev Belotsikovsky would not comment. Mia Swart, a visiting professor at Witwatersrand University's law school, specializing in international law, explained what's likely to happen now.
The ICC, would most probably have to investigate what is being claimed here. It would be a drawn-out process.
Israel has always maintained it is acting in self-defense. Earlier this week, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Israel was taking extraordinary efforts to minimize civilian casualties. South Africa is one of the most vocal international supporters of Palestinians. The governing African National Congress Party has often drawn what it says are parallels between black South Africans' struggle against the racist white apartheid regime and the situation in the Middle East. Party spokeswoman Malengi Bengu-Motsiri said Thursday they would support an opposition motion in Parliament calling for the closure of the Israeli embassy in Pretoria.
And given the current atrocities in occupied Palestine, the ANC will agree to a parliamentary motion which calls upon the government to close the Israeli embassy in South Africa and suspend all diplomatic relations with Israel.
There have been large pro-Palestinian protests in South African cities, as well as a smaller pro-Israel march that was disrupted by counter-protesters. The Jewish Board of Deputies, a group representing the Jewish community in South Africa, says there's been a massive rise in anti-Semitism in the country since the outbreak of the conflict. Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Johannesburg.
As we've just heard, criticism for Israel is coming from all around the world. So too is grief and anxiety. As casualties mount, the American relatives of those affected by the violence are grieving the loss of friends and loved ones. In New York, Aaron Rainin talks with people who have family ties to the conflict.
Among the 240 people Hamas took hostage on October 7th was Omer Neutra, a U.S. citizen who had been serving in the Israel Defense Forces. His devastated parents, Orna and Ronan Neutra of Long Island, New York, are grappling with the situation.
This is unimaginable, right? And this has become a reality. This month feels like 3 months, and then again it feels like yesterday.
The uncertainty that we live and the 240 other families live, simply unbearable.
The Neutras are hoping that President Joe Biden, who spoke to them via Zoom, can secure the return of their son.
Originally, we were told that he's going to give us 10, 15 minutes. He spent over an hour with us and really expressed his full commitment and his administration full commitment to bring this issue to a resolution. And as he said, it's his top priority.
Others in the New York area are also facing hardship. Sammy Shaban, a Palestinian-American attorney and businessman living in New Jersey, says many of his family members have been killed in the Israeli shelling of Gaza in recent weeks.
So this is my uncle Mohammed, who died. This is his wife. This is his whole family. It's my cousin Abdullah and Mohammed. Everybody in this picture is now dead. So I've lost 17 members in total.
Shaban believes that this conflict could persist for years.
Death all around them, there's destruction, and it's impossible to make sense of it. What's happening today is only going to be something that we will feel for 10, 20, 30 years.
Lisa Shirk, a professor of peace studies at the University of Notre Dame in Indiana, sees potential for a political solution to the decades-long conflict.
It's in the international community's interest. It's in Israel's interest to make sure that out of this crisis and horrible period, we turn a corner, we have a new paradigm for relationship with Israel and Palestine, and that we don't let a generation of children in Gaza grow up with anger. And of course, that rage turned into the nightmare of October 7th with the war crimes that cannot be justified by any excuse of rage. A win-win for everyone is a political solution that brings real security and real safety to Israelis and Palestinians.
Meanwhile, their loved ones in the United States watch the news and wait. Aaron Rainin, VOA News, New York City.
Since the start of the war between Israel and Hamas, Jewish settler attacks on Palestinians have increased. This, according to a report by the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs. In the southern part of the West Bank, more than a dozen villages have been destroyed, farmers have been evicted from their land, and more than 1,000 people have been displaced. VOA's Jan Boychat has the story.
Amount of rubble, personal items, and destroyed furniture used to be the home of two Palestinian families in the herding community of El Mafagara until 2 weeks ago. One day, Jewish settlers who lived nearby arrived with guns, trucks, and a bulldozer, according to those who live here. In minutes, they say, everything was gone.
The first attack was against these houses. The settlers came dressed in soldiers' clothing and started attacking and destroying everything. We never saw something like that from the soldiers. Before, we received a warning letter. But this time, the settlers just came in soldiers' clothing and destroyed everything.
Hamandeh says his family has lived on this land in the Hebron Hills for centuries, herding sheep and cows and cultivating olives. The settlements, he says, are getting closer and closer. And with the war between Israel and Hamas, Hamandeh says things now seem to be out of control, with threats and violence.
I feel humiliated. I feel insulted to be choked out, to be so badly treated. Not by Jews, because Jews, we have been living with them. They are good people. But by these Zionists who come from everywhere in the world, who know no religion or ethics.
According to the UN humanitarian agency, OCHA, at least 15 villages have been destroyed since the October 7 Hamas attack on Israel, and more than 1,000 people have been displaced. The Israeli government press office and the Israeli Defense Forces declined to comment about the increasing number of Jewish settlers' attacks against Palestinian farmers. In the last weeks, the Israeli government began the distribution of thousands of rifles and handguns for civilians who live in border areas and in settlements in the West Bank.
We are going from place to place, giving out these firearms. This saves lives. Every rifle, every pistol that we are freeing up with the issuing of licenses can save a family. Every firearm, every assault rifle can save a residential building. I tell the citizens of Israel, go arm yourselves.
At this Bedouin village that shares a fence with a Jewish settlement, things are getting worse by the day, the residents say. They say they have been threatened to leave the area by the settlers and are living under a kind of siege.
It's 2 weeks. They came, settlers, militia entered, actually invaded the community in a very horrific way, and they detained all of the youth in one tent in the community, and they were integrating us very violently. It was like something that we just see terrorist people do.
People here say that before the war, they would call the Israeli police to solve any problems they had with the neighbor settlers. But now, they say, nobody comes to help them anymore. Yabwesha, VOA News, Hebron, the West Bank.
You're listening to Flashpoint, Global Crises from the Voice of America. I'm Steve Karish in Washington. The challenges facing Palestinian children in a few minutes. Now we check up on Ukraine, where Russian attacks continue and the government is facing a new challenge from Poland. Anna Chernikova is in Kyiv.
So over the night, Russian forces attacked Ukraine with 10 drones. Ukrainian air defense and air forces reported and confirmed that 9 drones were shut down. But at the same time, there is no information about any casualties or damage. At this point, we know that Mykolaiv, Odessa, Zhytomyr, and Khmelnytsky regions were under attack. What's important, Odessa, Mykolaiv, south part of the country, here we understand that port infrastructure was probably under the main target. And Khmelnytsky region, which is in the west, here we're talking about energy infrastructure.
We also understand there are problems, this time with one of Ukraine's biggest allies and supporters in Poland. They are boycotting freight coming from Ukraine. Is this part of that agricultural controversy that has been happening for a long time?
Yes, exactly. So Poland-Ukraine, let's call it agricultural argument, freight argument is ongoing. And basically everything started on November 6th when dozens of Polish carriers began blocking three main border crossing with Ukraine. And their main demand, among other things, were the introduction of commercial permits for Ukrainian companies to transport goods, with the exception of humanitarian aid and supplies for the Ukrainian army. However, European Commission warned that the key demand of Polish carriers, the restoration of these permits, is not legally possible. The reason why was explained by the Minister of Transport of Ukraine. They specified that this key demand is not possible to fulfill because the agreement on the liberalization of freight and transportation between Ukraine and the EU will be valid until the end of June of the next year. So at this point, what we know is that on November 16, representatives of Polish truck carriers announced that they would expand the border protests to another, one more checkpoint with Ukraine.
Now, it seems like the Ukrainian government has many larger, more important things on their mind than some trucks. What is the government's reaction in Kyiv? How big a deal is this to the people in Ukraine?
Well, in general, of course, Ukrainian both government and Ukrainian society did not expect Poland to cause this kind of argument, definitely. And for Ukrainian government, it's extremely important to keep the border free without huge queues, which are currently at the border because of this protest, because this is the only way Ukraine can actually export now, especially if we're talking about grain exports. Of course, this affects not only government, but also society and Ukrainian economy, first of all. And at this point, of course, it's crucial for Ukrainian side to seek agreement and to get to certain agreement. But at the same time, Ukraine needs this, liberalization procedure to be in place because otherwise it will be extremely difficult to continue this amount of export which was happening before the protest started.
I think we'll leave it there for today. Anna Chernikova is in Kyiv. Anna, as always, thanks for your time. Thanks for your reporting on this.
Thank you, Steve.
Back now to the crisis in Israel and Gaza. Children are suffering the most from the impacts of war. Lori London spoke with Steve Sosby, president and founder of the Palestinian Children's Relief Fund, which has three offices in Gaza.
What can you tell us about what's happening on the ground, particularly when it comes to children, health and health care, and what your teams are reporting?
So obviously on this situation in Gaza, there's been a complete breakdown of the health system, particularly related to treatment of children. In addition to that, the challenges that kids on the ground in Gaza are facing are compounded by the fact that the vast majority of those children are now displaced persons. They're living in schools, UN schools, or living in substandard housing with 40, 50 people in one or two rooms. They're sharing toilets with 300, 400, 500 people. They're living in tents. There's food insecurity. They're living on reduced calories. They need the basics. They need food and water, but they also need clothing. They need medication. They need shelter. They need hygiene kits. They need access to medication and medical care. And that's also a significant factor as well. And that's not even talking about the number of injured and killed children in Gaza. We know that now between those who are missing and presumed buried under rubble and those who've actually been documented as fatalities in Gaza, that 6,000 children have been killed out of a population of 1 million. In addition, we have another 10,000 children with significant injuries, including amputations and spinal cord injuries and significant injuries that will require extended periods of reconstructive surgery and rehabilitation, which those services are not available in Gaza as well. The entire infrastructure of hospitals is broken down. The accessibility of treatment for patients is broken down. Not only the children who have been injured and suffer these terrible injuries do not have access to care anymore because of the lack of fuel in the hospitals, but also hospitals like the Rantisi Pediatric Hospital and the Nasser Pediatric Hospital, both have been shut down and do not have any patients in them at all. We know that neonatal units, which are housing premature babies, are not providing care any longer due to the lack of fuel and electricity to run the incubators. Patients in the intensive care units, particularly children, are not having artificial breathing ventilators to keep them alive as a result of the lack of fuel. And this is obviously having a tremendous detrimental effect on the health situation there. If you add to it as well that kids who have other types of medical conditions that require access to medical treatment, like, for example, kids with diabetes, kids with on dialysis, kids with cancer, kids with heart conditions, kids with cystic fibrosis, kids that have medical needs that require access to treatment are not getting that treatment as well. So it's a complete breakdown of the health system related to the welfare of children.
And so you have offices in Gaza. Are your staff able to do anything at this point, given the situation?
Our staff are documenting cases who we can get out for medical care. So we have children who are injured, who have suffered significant injuries or have other kind of medical conditions. Our organizations over the years was the main organization on the ground, bringing in volunteer medical teams to provide surgery and surgical treatment for children. Those teams are not coming in. So we have these kids to send outside for care that they otherwise can't get. So that's what our doctors are doing.
Are they able to get them out?
Well, that's the challenge, is getting them access to getting their names on the list across the border at Rafah. And we just started the process of identifying these kids because obviously in the situation on the ground, our staff are not working currently in the field simply because it's too dangerous and there's nothing for them to do. There's no vehicles for them to take. Cars don't have gas. People are not, there isn't any aid to provide because we're not able to get it into Gaza. All of the aid that we have to bring in now has to be brought in from outside. We cannot purchase it from the local market. The local markets are exhausted.
And you mentioned the kids having shelter in schools with hundreds of others.
In some cases, thousands.
How are they staying safe? It doesn't seem like there is really anywhere to be certain that people are safe, especially children.
And that's the problem, is that there are no places for kids to be safe. And that continues to be a challenge, is that for our staff and for everyone there, is, although they've claimed that if you go south, you're going to a safe area, the fact is that 40% of the casualties are taking place in the south. So there are no safe spaces.
What about their mental health? This has to be traumatizing and terrifying on these children.
Mental health is probably the biggest factor that is not seen, because these are emotional scars that these kids are bearing, not physical ones. And the fact is that every single child in the Gaza Strip, and we're talking about 1 million children out of a population of 2.2 million, are suffering from and will suffer from long-term trauma and emotional trauma, for the lack of a better word. They're going to suffer from mental health challenges as a result of being exposed to continuous violence and insecurity and fear and death and destruction and injuries. And this has been going on for an extended period of time, even prior to October 7th. So there's a whole generation of children, and it's affecting the entire Gaza Strip. Every single person, adults and children, are walking away with traumatic stress disorder. And I'm going to call it current traumatic stress disorder. It's usually called post, but in the case of Gaza, there's nothing post about it. It's just going on and on and on.
That's VOA's Lori London, host of Issues in the News, right here on The Voice of America. She was speaking with Steve Sosby, president of the Palestinian Children's Relief Fund. And that's going to wrap it up for today. There's more VOA coverage 24 hours a day on our website, voanews.com, and across our social media platforms. On behalf of everyone at VOA, thanks for listening. Until next week, I'm Steve Karish.
Stay up to date with VOA podcasts. Each weekday, International Edition covers the world's biggest stories while Flashpoint Iran and Flashpoint Ukraine examine their respective regions in depth every week.